Well, we're back to rising bond yields, and it seems like Fed speakers are getting even more ardent about cuts coming later, even entertaining the possibility of a rate rise. Now, there's a turn-up for the books. And Australia's employment numbers yesterday, do they line up with what the RBA was expecting? And Taiwan Semiconductors, a less optimistic outlook for AI. Has it peaked already? Plus, Netflix earnings. We've got those for you as well today. It's Friday. It's the 19th of April, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, the US dollar has jumped back up again today. It's up 0.2%. The Aussie is down by the same amount to 64.2 US cents. A 0.25% fall in the euro, just 0.1% lower for the pound. US equity still heading lower, five sessions in a row, really. The Dow has managed to scrape just into the green at the close, but the S&P closed down 0.25%. The Nasdaq down 0.5%, around 15,600. That's 5% down from its high a little over a week ago. This is, of course, ahead of the Netflix earnings, which were pretty good, which we'll tell you about shortly. Bond yields are back on the rise as well. Another 5 basis points on 10-year treasuries, 3 for German bunds, and 10-year Aussie bonds yesterday fell 10 basis points to 4.28%. Now on futures, back up 7 basis points from that. And small moves for oil. WTI is just in the green. Brent down 0.25%, around 87 a barrel. So markets are calming down a bit today. Perhaps there's hope that the Middle East can all be settled with sanctions on Iran rather than shots being fired. We'll see on that. Instead, the focus is on the Fed, and we've heard talk of rate cuts being slower for a few sessions now at least. But now, well, let's see where we are with NAB's Ken Crompton in Sydney, because Ken, John Williams, the Fed's man in New York, has even entertained the idea of a rate rise. He said that it's not his baseline assumption, but said it's possible if warranted. Now, that'd be a turn up for the books, wouldn't it?
Yeah, good morning, Phil. Apologies to the Rodrigo fans for not getting a hat trick from him. But on Mr. Williams, and certainly given he's considered to be typically sort of a little bit more on the dovish side of the spectrum, for his comments that he sees no need to be urgent, or he literally said he doesn't feel any urgency to cut rates given the economy's in a pretty good place. Yeah, that certainly did sort of set the market alight a little bit. I mean, to be fair, it was a night of relatively modest moves anyway. Yields were already trending upwards, a little bit of a retracement from that risk off bid that we got through the US session yesterday, and that did continue through the local session. So it was sort of adding to a trend anyway. I mean, coming on top of some sort of softer jobless claims data, which I guess fed into his point to a large extent, but certainly, you know, it did add to momentum on the night in terms of yields heading up.
Yeah, there's him and Bostic as well. Bostic chiming in and saying that he doesn't see the need to cut rates until the back end of the year. So, not much hope for the middle of the year, it seems. That's just a distant memory. And there wasn't a lot of data overnight to change the sentiment, was there? So you mentioned the jobless claims, lower than expected, but the same as last time. So, you know, perhaps the bigger moves were in the Philly Fed Manufacturing Index, because the employment number for the Philly Fed was lower, -10.7. The numbers so far this year have been much lower, but prices paid as well, a value of 23 for April from 3.7 in March. So a big rise. I mean, it has been higher. It was higher in December, and it's obviously dangerous to look at, you know, draw big conclusions from just one survey. But that's a worrying number, isn't it?
It is to some extent, yeah. And it does continue a bit of a theme of tag-teaming between the Philly Fed survey and the Empire State survey, which was a little bit weak last time we got the print on that. So the Philly Fed's come through to show strength in the rebound. The new orders in there were very strong, so that was a positive. But it really was, as you've suggested, those prices paid numbers, you know, jumping on the index number there from 3.7 to 23, highest level since the end of last year. That did trigger a little bit of concern. But interestingly, it does dovetail in anecdotally with what some other data points in there do dovetail in with what we got from the Fed's beige book survey of business activity yesterday, where although prices paid in the Philly Fed, both on the spot measure as well as the 6-month ahead measure, both jumped, in both cases, prices received increased by prices received actually fell. So that does dovetail in with what the Philly, with what the Beige Book told us about the growing inability for, for businesses to push through cost increases to their to their end consumers. So we did see a little bit of evidence of that in the Philly Fed survey as well. So, you know, it is a small regional survey, but it is interesting to see that point. And obviously that is a particularly important point for the Fed going forward. You know, if you're Given we do have, you know, labour market strength, as we saw in the jobless claims staying steady, you know, and that's still continuing to stand apart from various other measures, which show there is sort of layoffs going on. You know, the NFIB hiring stuff is weakening a little bit, but jobless claims is what it is. It's not moving anywhere yet. So US labour market is remaining pretty strong. That's why Mr. Williams and his friends are talking about the possibility of there being no cuts this year. But if you're seeing that coming alongside, yeah, slowing ability to price passes through. Well, that's good for the inflation.
And there is a price being paid with existing home sales. We got those numbers out overnight. So down 4.3% in March. They were 9.6% up the month before. But of course, back then, everyone was looking for earlier rate cuts. Now they know that's not the case. And the mortgage rate shot up. So the 30-year mortgage rate from the data from the Freddie Mac, according to the Wall Street Journal this morning, is at 0.25% to 7.1%. So a big rise in mortgage rates. You know, people aren't buying houses again. So no surprise. But let's look at the employment numbers from Australia yesterday. Big falls, 6.6 thousand fewer people working. There was expected to be a rise of over 7,000, wasn't there? So does that explain why bond yields were falling yesterday, or was that just a response to the general direction of the markets?
It was a little bit of both. There was a little bit of an agnostic Australian response in the market coming out of the data, but really small. If you're looking at how many basis points of cuts the market was pricing for the RBA, by early next year, it moved exactly one basis point lower. So it did move a bit, but not a huge amount. It was mostly that broader global risk-off bond move that really continued through our session. But the unemployment data was pretty interesting. The unemployment rate's has held most of that February decline. So it's ticked up 0.1 to 3.8. So a little bit better than the market was expecting. So even though you did have the employment change number, so that minus 6, which was expected to be around a plus 7 or even a little bit stronger by us, even though you got that, the unemployment rate moved up a bit just due to the way the participation rate has moved. But even then, this part rate is still sitting, it's off the most recent peaks, but it's still at very long run highs. And I mean, as well as the unemployment rate not ticking up that much, if you look at some of the measures of labour underutilisation, once again, those are barely off their 2022 lows as well. And in fact, I think we actually got a little bit of an improvement in the underemployment rate over the course of March. That was down 1/10 to 6.5.
Right, but there was a shift, wasn't there? The change is been largely the fall in part-time work, because full-time work is up 28,000.
Yeah, and I mean, in the short term, it's a bit dangerous to extrapolate too much from sort of month-to-month numbers in that sense. But yeah. I guess what we would look at is if you sort of try and smooth out the volatility of at least these past three prints, when there's arguably, well, there clearly is evidence of significant changing seasonality. You're looking at trend employment growth over that period of about 28,000. Given relatively high immigration we're running at the moment, we see, I guess, sort of the employment growth trend needed to maintain the unemployment rate at a given level is probably about 38,000. So there is a gap there between what we're sort of actually printing and what's needed to hold the unemployment rate steady. So there is weakening in the labour market, but it's still proving to be very gradual. You've had the unemployment rate sitting below 4% for effectively 2 years now.
And how does this sit with the RBA's forecast? And does it change is it likely to change the RBA's thinking in the slightest?
It will probably force them into shifting their Q2 employment forecast a little bit. Yeah, they do have an average of 4.2 expected through the quarter. That's looking pretty hard to achieve from a starting point of 3.8. So they will be forced to tweak that. But the way we're looking at it doesn't necessarily mean that needs to drastically probably change what they're thinking in terms of policy. If anything, it does just sort of buy them. It does sort of open up a little bit of a wedge between the the two legs of their policy mandate. You know, they've said that they are quite focused on maintaining the gains in the labour market they've secured over the pandemic period. The risk to that is always that unemployment begins to creep up much faster than they want, whilst inflation is coming down slower than they want. Now, arguably, at the moment, the global trend for services inflation to come down more slowly whilst goods disinflation has stalled. Australia's not standing apart from that, at least by having the unemployment rate reset itself by 0.2, 0.3 over the past couple of months. That's helped by a little bit of time before the RBA potentially, you know, or where there's a risk of them getting a little bit pincered by rising unemployment rate before inflation's down. So this buys them a bit more space between those two numbers. Right.
Today, not a lot going on. Japan's inflation, first of all, last time for February, it was flat for the month, but up 2.8% for the year. So what's it like to be this time? And what do they want to see? What's the sweet spot for the Bank of Japan?
Well, I think the core numbers are picked to slow down a little bit in a year-on-year basis, coming down to 2.7 or 3, depending which number you like. I mean, obviously being the Bank of Japan, it always is a bit hard to argue exactly where they might want inflation to land, given they're still struggling to, or still really wanting to make sure inflation is sustainably high, whereas the rest of the world is looking for inflation to be sustainably low from the current levels.
What you don't have, don't you?
Yeah, I think that's very true, actually, which is probably relatively unusual in the case of inflation. But yeah, look, I think that number's around 3. That's not going to change the path too dramatically for the bond. Certainly, the market is sort of come around to the fact that there's not going to be a drastic material follow through on the pace of their on the pace of their monetary policy tightening. Levels of the yen continue to sort of support that. I mean, 10-year JGB yields have continued to creep up over the last little while as in correlation with other yields moving higher, about 0.86. But I guess that the key point being, as a marker of success for the bodge and what they did, in tightening last month, was that hasn't spiked and hasn't caused sort of dramatic concern and spillover into global bond markets. So it's been a relatively controlled path there in that sense. And in fact, I have seen a few headlines on today, you sort of speculating that the bodge could be looking to end quantitative or dramatically slow quantitative easing as being a next step in tightening as well. So that could be interesting.
Right. Now, also today, UK retail sales later on. These numbers are for March. Actually, these could be the first meaningful ones for a while, couldn't they? Because December was 3.5% down for the month, presumably because of Black Friday the month before. January was 3.6% up, but that was because December was down so much. February was flat, perhaps because things were evening out. Black Friday's got a lot to answer for. This could actually be the one that actually tells us how retail sales are actually doing.
Yeah, which I guess is you're probably sort of telling the story of a lot of UK data there, with that sort of volatility and question marks over seasonality and a bunch of other things. Because if you can't read the labour market correctly, at least hopefully you can get a good read on retail sales.
Will have been selling lots of canoes, I would imagine, actually, because it's been raining for about 6 months.
Yeah, and and obviously as a metric for the consumer sector, it will be important for the BOE to get a read on that. So it'll be interesting to see where it comes out.
Right, okay. And, we'll give you the details on Netflix in a moment, because they've just reported. But TSMC, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturer, in their earnings result, I mean, they did okay. The thing is, they are less optimistic about the future, though, aren't they? And that is the concern. You know, has this AI hype peaked already? Is the question?
Yeah, that was certainly part of those results that caught headlines. Decent beat on the actual sort of results for recent quarters or the current quarter, but it was that softening outlook that really caught the market attention. And out of the modest decline in the S&P 500, a lot of which is reversed as we've been talking, but still it is IT that's leading the S&P 500 down. The Nasdaq's down a bit harder on the day, and sure, I mean, slightly higher rates would ordinarily be part of that, but I think it's mostly this sort of softening outlook from Taiwan Semiconductor is mostly pointing to the demand picture, particularly out of sort of things like the smartphones and devices. They're just seeing a relatively weak demand there, which is also seeing sort of correlation in that out of Apple and sort of some of the other major manufacturers of those devices too. There's a bit of a sag in confidence there.
Well, and the opposite of artificial intelligence or intelligence of any kind, just sitting in front of the TV, and Netflix results tell us that, well, good and bad, really, 9.3 million subscribers added. The market was expecting 4.8 million, so it's sort of like double what was expecting. Q1 earnings per share, 5.28 versus 4.52 expected. But revenue, maybe this is the disappointing thing, 9.37 billion. The estimate was 9.26 billion. You would have thought the difference will be that much greater given that they have taken on so many more subscribers, so their revenue per subscriber must be down a little bit. But anyway, that's the Netflix result. The market reacted badly to initially, but I can see it's in the green now, up about 1.5% in after hours trade. I think that's all we can tell you about with Netflix for now. That'll do, won't it? Good to talk, Ken. We'll catch you again next time.
Cheers. Thanks, Phil.
And this afternoon, the weekend edition, we're going to look at Europe, starting with what to expect from the ECB.
Most of the consensus is actually looking for them to cut in June and then to continue cutting. As it stands, we're slightly different from the consensus because we think that they're adamant that they're data dependent, and given where inflation has fallen and that wage growth is coming down, which is something that they've really been keeping an eye on, that they'll actually keep going straight away. So we've got four consecutive cuts in four consecutive meetings.
Wow. Well, look, we discussed much more than the ECB. We look at Europe's future more generally. If China decouples, for example, how does Germany do? If the Middle East situation escalates, how does Europe as a whole fare? And what about tariffs on China, on their electric vehicles? Is that going to happen? I talked to Mel De Bono from Pantheon Macroeconomics in London about all things Europe on the weekend edition. That's out this afternoon. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. I'll see you back here for that one. Thanks for listening.